I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is November 9th, 2008. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today we're going to explore argument number 24 from the website of famed skeptic debunker Winston Wu. The argument from skeptics is, there is no such thing as a soul or spirit that lives on after you die. Consciousness is purely neurological and nothing else. Winston says this is the standard materialistic view of life after death. While at this point we cannot prove conclusively whether or not there is life after death, there are many compelling categories of evidence for it. A great summary of all these categories can be found at the following website, which lists over 20 categories of evidence by a lawyer named Victor Zammit, with an essay for each category. Winston, a lawyer is the last person who should hope that there is life after death. A lawyer's worst nightmare would be to discover that now they have to answer for everything they did in life. Winston says, here are the categories of evidence that it lists. The irrefutable objective evidence. Winston, this guy is just like you. He makes a proclamation that his beliefs are objective and irrefutable. Talk about having a God complex. You can't just claim your beliefs are irrefutable. You have to prove them. Now I see where some of your absolute certainty comes from, Winston. Winston says, Victor Zammit has a BA in psychology, an MA in history, an LLB, a PhD. Winston, when you see people list every credential they have ever earned after their name, you should recognize that you are being hit with an appeal to authority. The reason they list everything they have ever accomplished is that they are attempting to impress you into accepting what they are about to say. It is another way of saying, don't you dare dispute what you are about to be told by such an accomplished individual. Winston continues with Victor Zammit's credentials. Retired solicitor of the Supreme Court of New South Wales and the High Court of Australia. Psychic researcher and lecturer in psychic phenomena. Contents. 1. Introduction. Essential information. 2. What's wrong with being a closed-minded skeptic? Winston, I can see by his wording that this clown is more than a reference. He seems more like your mentor. He also makes the mistake of calling skeptics closed-minded, which is exactly the opposite of what is true. I'm confident that anyone who disagrees with Bozo here is labeled as closed-minded. Winston goes on. Number 3, respected scientist who investigated. Winston, to be classified as a respected scientist requires nothing more than to agree with him. He goes on. Number 4, electronic voice phenomena. 5, instrumental transcommunication. 6, recent advances in ITC under construction. 7, rebutting the skeptics on electronic voice phenomena and ITC. 8, Einstein's E equals MC squared and materialism. 9, other psychic laboratory experiments. 10, scientific observation of mediums. And finally, Leonore Piper, a U.S. medium who convinced all skeptics. Winston, since no medium has ever convinced any skeptic, much less all skeptics, this chapter should raise your eyebrows. He continues, the list that never ends. 12, two closed-minded cheats. Materialization, mediumship. 14, Helen Duncan, a magnificent British medium. Winston, I know you would never accept anything that doesn't fall into your belief system, but I'll offer it anyway. Go to Wikipedia and read this history of the magnificent British medium, Helen Duncan. She was anything but magnificent. If this is your hero's idea of proof, then he is an even bigger bozo than I thought. To think that this guy was practicing law is pretty scary. The thought that you may someday do the same is just as scary. He goes on. Number 15, direct voice mediumship. Number 16, a modern medium who confounds the skeptics. Winston, this would be the fantasy chapter. No modern medium has ever confounded the skeptics. He goes on. Number 17, irrefutable proof. Frederick Myers Cross correspondences. Number 18, proxy settings refute the allegation of mind reading. 19, science and the out-of-body experience. 20, science and the near-death experience. And there's 11 more, and I'm just too tired to continue reading them. Then there's a part 2, Theoretical Physics Backs Survival, by British physics analyst Ron Pearson, author and lecturer on subatomic particles. Winston, true believers always attempt to invoke science to add credibility to their claims. That is the same science that believers hate so fervently because it never supports their beliefs. But if they think they can twist it and make it appear as though it supports them, they will quickly use it. And Winston goes on, there's a third part to the book, The Seven Laws of Psychic Energy by Dr. Victor Zammit. Winston, so now the lawyer is making laws? And we move along to argument number 25, which skeptics say, spiritual experiences only exist in your mind, not in external reality. To which Winston replies, since no one knows all that exists in all of reality, including skeptics, no one can say with infallible authority what exists and what doesn't. Yet the Bible, Winston, takes such a position. And you, Winston, have made it clear that you believe in the Bible. Claims made by Middle Eastern goat herders 2,000 years ago are all it takes to put you down on your knees in prayer. He continues, even if we take something out of fantasy, like unicorns and dragons, for instance, we don't know that those types of creatures don't exist in the trillions on other planets in the universe, since we haven't even been to any others beside our own. Winston, that is exactly why it is almost impossible to prove that something does not exist. Yet when your beliefs are challenged by skeptics and they demand that you produce proof, which of course you never have, since all of your beliefs are unsupported beliefs, you resort to the tactic of requiring them to prove that your beliefs are not true. You do this for two reasons. One, you don't have any proof, and two, you use this tactic because you know, as we all do, that your unsupported beliefs cannot be disproven. The mistake you make is to then assume that you have therefore proven your beliefs. All you have done is to attempt to distract your opponents. That distraction technique works like a charm with other irrationals, but it fails miserably with trained skeptics. That is why you hate them so much. You cannot get them to accept your beliefs as you can with irrationals. Winston continues, furthermore, string theory and physics suggest that there may be many dimensions, which, if true, may suggest other planes or levels of reality that we don't understand yet. Winston, until we know anything for certain about string theory, you are just wasting our time with your nonsense. Even physicists barely understand the theory. Like all irrationals, you latch on to scientific ideas that you have no concept of, thinking that somehow they might help you hold on to your fantasies. A perfect example is the misuse of the concept in quantum physics regarding wave-particle duality. Irrationals who haven't got a clue what they are talking about think they see an opportunity to use science to support their fantasies. They claim that the duality proves that anything is possible. Therefore, they feel free to retain their fantasies. Physicist Victor Stinger explains the concept in layman's terms and shows that no magical explanations are necessary. To read the article, just go to my website at theskepticarena.com and click on the link for quantum physics. Winston goes on, these other levels of reality could contain creatures or beings that we can't even imagine, even unicorns and dragons. But Winston, you're missing the point. Unicorns and dragons have always been proposed as existing in our dimension. It is irrelevant what exists in other dimensions. People like you, Winston, want to remain little children your whole lives and hold on to your Santa Claus fantasies. And you do so by attempting to manipulate science so that it will appear you have some kind of credibility. It seems obvious that you will never face the real world. You never will be capable of coming to grips with your own mortality, and you will remain like this for the rest of your life. I do not write these replies to your fantasies out of any delusion that they may help you or other true believers like you. I write these replies for people who are not beyond help, people who truly want to learn how to use their reasoning minds, people who want the truth, not confirmation of their beliefs. These people, Winston, as far as you are concerned, might as well be a separate species. Winston goes on, even arch-skeptic James Randi. Winston, there you go again with the personal attacks. I've pointed this out to you before. You only use the adjective arch when you are referring to someone you wish to insult. And then Winston goes on, has said that to say that something doesn't exist is an extraordinary claim. When Eldon Byrd, the naval scientist who tested psychic Uri Geller's effects on nitinol, saw this argument in my article, he wittily remarked, "The lack of spiritual experiences only exists in the skeptic's mind, not in external reality." Winston, Mr. Byrd seems witty to you, but if he fell for that con Geller, the joke is on him. By the way, I use the word con meaning con artist, but after the frauds perpetrated by this man, he should literally be a con. And I'm talking about Uri Geller. Now we go on to argument number 30 from the website of Winston Wu. Skeptics claim that atheists don't hold the belief that God doesn't exist. An atheist is one who is without a belief in God or lacks a belief in him. Therefore, the burden of proof for God is on the theist, not the atheist. Winston, that is exactly right. Winston replies, atheists like to remind others of this argument because they feel that people have a misconception about their position. They emphasize that their position is not that they believe that God doesn't exist, only that they don't believe in God. Using semantics, they point out that the definition of atheism is to be without belief in God, because the A in atheism means without, and theism means belief in God. However, this makes little difference either way because their core philosophy toward God is the same. Beautiful, Winston. You just gave a perfect demonstration of what the irrational mind does when the dictionary sides against them. They simply redefine the word to make it mean what they need it to mean. Since the dictionary backed up the atheist position, you must attack it from a different angle. If the dictionary had sided with you, you would be all over them. Since it didn't, you are forced to take the position that it makes little difference, and then you concoct a story about core philosophy. This highlights the difference between rational people and irrational thinkers like Winston Wu. Rational people must follow the rules of logic and language. Irrational people cannot follow those rules because when they do so, they lose. Rather than admit they are wrong, they go into the old irrational song and dance to explain away why the rules don't apply in this particular case. Winston continues, "The reason why they emphasize this strongly, I believe, is to put themselves in a less attackable position." Winston, now we see why you are redefining words. You need a position that you can attack. That is called the straw man logical fallacy, when you create a weaker argument to replace a strong one. The goal is to convince everyone that the straw man is actually the real argument. When you knock down the straw man, then you claim victory over the original argument. This technique works great on other irrationals. Skeptics are trained to spot it and won't allow believers to get away with it. Winston, the straw man logical fallacy is one of your most commonly used techniques, second only to throwing it back, in which you take the skeptical argument, turn it around backwards, and throw it back, claiming that they are guilty of the exact thing that you are in fact guilty of. Winston continues, "This way they can demand the burden of proof on the theist who believes in God, while claiming that since they don't believe in God, they don't have to defend that belief." Wrong, Winston. The burden of proof is always on the claimant. When someone demands proof of a claim, one of two things will happen. One, since you like lists, proof will be offered and evaluated. Or two, lacking proof, the claimant will resort to a logical fallacy or distraction technique. One of the most common logical fallacies is to switch the burden of proof. In this fallacy, the claimant, unable to produce evidence, takes the position that by daring to ask for proof, you have now made a claim. If you allow people to trick you like this, you deserve what you get. Through training and critical thinking, you can learn to spot ploys like these and defeat them. Never let the irrational trick you into defending a claim you never made. Asking for proof is your right. Only people who cannot prove their claims will try to deceive you into thinking that by asking for proof, you are now the one making the claim. People like Winston, irrationals, live by these techniques. They have to. They have no choice because their only other option is to admit defeat and actually learn something new, and that they will never do. To irrationals, it's all a game, and to rationals, it is about learning truth. Winston goes on, "It's a political semantic ploy, I think. That is why most atheists prefer the term, 'I don't believe in God,' to 'God doesn't exist.' No, Winston, as previously stated, it is nearly impossible to prove that something does not exist. Therefore, atheists don't use the phrase 'God doesn't exist.' They use the more accurate phrase, 'I don't believe in God.'" Winston goes on, "You see, they can't really prove that God doesn't exist because you can't prove a negative." Actually, Winston, you can prove a negative. If you want to prove you are not in the room, which is a negative, then all you have to do is prove that you are somewhere else. To be more accurate, you should have said, "It is almost impossible to prove that something does not exist." Winston continues, "Regardless of either definition, the atheist obviously believes deep down that there isn't a God or deity anywhere, anyway, which is prevalent in their attempts to debunk and refute every single argument for the existence of God." Winston removed the word attempts. They have debunked and refuted every single argument for the existence of God. There is no evidence for the existence of God. The only thing Christians have left is to throw a Bible at you, claim it is magic, and then threaten you with indescribable horrors if you don't agree to believe in it. And that is the end of Winston Wu for today. So now I'm going to move along to the science segment, where we have more physics facts. Relativity was the theory by Albert Einstein in 1905. The first version was special relativity, in which he discussed inertial frames. General relativity was 11 years later in 1916, which addressed accelerating frames and gravitational fields. A soliton is a wave of any type. It could be water, air, but it is a wave that holds its shape due to the canceling effects of compression and dispersion. It is similar to a bubble. In the ocean, it's usually the case when you see a single wave, not as part of a set of waves. Sound travels farther in water than it does in air. String theory, since Winston brought it up, says that all matter are manifestations of the different vibrations of incredibly tiny energy strings. String theory says the universe has 10 dimensions, 9 spatial, and 1 of time. However, there are different string theories, and the most popular one now claims 11 dimensions. Time. Atomic clocks use vibrations of quartz crystals to measure time. They are 1/1,000,000th of a second off per year. Microwave oscillation within an artificial sapphire crystal is 100,000 times more accurate. Sunburn. You cannot sunburn through a window pane because ultraviolet radiation has the same oscillating frequency as window glass, and the energy is therefore absorbed by the pane. Uranium. 1 ounce of uranium is the equivalent of 600 tons of TNT. X-ray diffraction. It exposes the atomic arrangement of crystals in molecules. Radioactivity. Atoms seek stability by discarding excess nucleus neutrons in the form of alpha and beta particles. An alpha particle is 2 protons and 2 neutrons. A beta particle, a neutron, becomes a proton and emits an electron. The universe. The universe is made up 74% of dark energy. That means we can't see it, but we know it's there. It's made up 22% of dark matter. Likewise, we can't see it, but we know it's there. Add those two numbers together, and it's 96%. So when you look at the universe and you see those zillions of galaxies, that only makes up 4% of the universe. That only accounts for 4% of all the matter and energy. And the size of the universe? Some people mistakenly think it is 13.7 billion light years because that's how long ago the Big Bang occurred. However, even though the light from the Big Bang has taken that long to reach us, you have to take into account the fact that the universe is expanding. So the actual size of the universe is not 13.7 billion years, which is a common mistake most people make. It is actually 46 billion light years in any direction. And now the arena goes abroad. At the Toronto International Film Festival this September, the debut of Cyrus Narasti's film, The Stoning of Soraya M., based on a true story, confronted the audience with all the gruesome and horrifying details of a barbarian ritual that is still being executed in today's Iran. Officially, there is no stoning in Iran after the head of judiciary, Ayatollah Mahmoud Hashimi Sharoudi, ordered under pressure of international protest a moratorium on stoning in 2002. But still, there have been several people stoned to death since then. In July 2007, the case of Jafar Kiani, stoned to death in Qazvin, that's northeastern Iran, caused an international outcry. In May 2006, Abbas H. and Mahbube A. were stoned to death in Mashhad, that's again in northeastern Iran. In 2007, the Islamic Supreme Court of Iran upheld several death sentences by stoning. In January 2008, Amnesty International called for Iran to abolish the stoning execution. At that time, at least 9 people sentenced to death by stoning were waiting for their execution. Strong protests from Iran and abroad during the next months pressed for the sentences to be commuted. But it is not yet clear if the victims are really saved. Meantime, the National Council of Resistance of Iran and human rights organizations reported about the cases of Gilan Mohammadi, a 30-year-old woman, and the Afghan national Golamali Eskandari, both sentenced to death by stoning and awaiting their sentences to be carried out in Isfahan prison, central Iran. The stoning of Soraya M. happened some 20 years ago and was described in 1990 by the French-Iranian journalist Sahahan in his book with the same title. It is the story of a young woman, mother of 9 children. If she had 9 children, I can't imagine that she would still be young, but that's what the article says. Who is wrongly accused of adultery by her husband Ali because he wants to get rid of her to marry a very young girl offered to him. Suddenly, the innocent and helpless Soroya is an outcast, stripped of basic human rights, marked like a sacrificial animal to become the object of a gory and bloodthirsty ritual that unites the conspiring male community of the village in destruction of the evil that she now seems to represent. The film rolls slowly from detail to detail. Stones are collected, not too big, as they should not kill fast. Her body is ritually washed, wrapped in a white shroud, and carried on a stretcher to the stoning ground. Her hands tied behind her back, there she is buried up to the armpits, and the macabre ritual unfolds. Her two sons are forced to abjure her and join the stone throwers. That's the most disgusting part of the whole thing to me, that her own sons were forced to be part of this. The article continues, the film is made by people who have personal experience with the fear and fundamentalism in power. Director Narashti is an Iranian-American whose family had to flee Iran after the revolution. When lead actress Shoreh Aghdashloo, another Iranian-American, once spoke to a reporter in the U.S. about torture victims in Iran, Iranian police arrested her brother at home and kept him in prison for 1 year. Well, that was just a real uplifting report from Iran. And now I'm going to do the last segment of the show. Today's famous quote is from Edward Gibbon, born in 1737, died 1794 at the age of 56. He was an English historian and member of Parliament. His most important work, The History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, was published in six volumes between 1776 and 1788. The history is known principally for the quality and irony of its prose, its use of primary sources, and its open denigration of organized religion, though the extent of this is disputed by some critics. And here are two quotes that I have from Edward Gibbon. In the revolution of 10 centuries, not a single discovery was made to exalt the dignity or promote the happiness of mankind. Not a single idea has been added to the speculative systems of antiquity, and a succession of patient disciples became in their turn the dogmatic teachers of the next servile generation. And his second quote, the various forms of worship which prevailed in the Roman world were all considered by the people to be equally true, by the philosopher as equally false, and by the magistrate as equally useful.
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.